The options have almost run out.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. If there was going to be a saving grace to the GM bankruptcy possibility, bondholders were the ones to be at the center of it. Yet the two couldn't come to terms on a number of items, most notably the percent stake in General Motors. Let's bring in Marketplace's Dan Gretsch to talk about what happened or what didn't happen. Morning, Dan.
Good morning.
So where are we now?
Well, we had a midnight deadline for bondholders who right now hold $27 billion in debt in GM to basically accept a deal to swap that debt for stock in restructured GM. And we needed 90% of bondholders to agree to that to avoid bankruptcy. Well, GM this morning said that not even close to that number had agreed to the deal, and GM is within days of going bankrupt.
So we've got all this still on the table. We're days away, the deadline, June 1st, and we're talking about the federal government infusing GM with billions of dollars for a large stake of the company, right?
Yeah, they're talking now about a 70% stake in General Motors in exchange for $50 billion or more that would be required to get General Motors through Chapter 11. The other major stakeholders, the bondholders, obviously turned down the opportunity to own a stake in the restructured company. They figure they'll do better in bankruptcy court. And the other major stakeholder is United Auto Workers. And yesterday they agreed to cut their stake in the new company in half. So the U.S. taxpayer is going to be the majority owner of General Motors.
How does the government run a car company, Dan?
Well, reports are right now that the government is going to be very hands-off. There's going to be no government employees on the GM board. The day-to-day operations are not going to involve any government officials. The U.S. government isn't going to be deciding which factories close or which contracts get renegotiated. The idea here is basically to get GM through this period and then to recoup money for taxpayers by selling that stake down the line.
All right. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch joining us this morning. Dan, thank you.
Thank you.
We're waiting for word as soon as today about which company Germany will back as a buyer for GM's European brand Opel. And Chrysler goes before a bankruptcy judge today to seek permission for a sale of assets to Italian carmaker Fiat, which incidentally is also in the running for GM's Opel. Let's see how all this is affecting the markets this morning. Where's Wall Street? Pretty much flat right now. The NASDAQ up just a few points. S&P 500 pretty much flat. The Dow down by about a tenth of a percent. S&P shares, as I mentioned, pretty much flat. FTSE's off a bit right now in Europe and Asia. Markets closed up. The Hang Seng added 5% in Asia today. Bill Stone is chief investment strategist at PNC Wealth Management. He joins us live from Philadelphia. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us this morning. So, all right, you know what the top story is this morning. Wall Street futures were up this morning, but it seems that this GM news soured that. What's the investor psyche right now?
Well, I think the thought is that we know, obviously, likely that GM goes into bankruptcy. It's certainly going to be a complex bankruptcy, and I think, you know, all of us realize, and the market certainly taking into account, that there's downside risk to employment if this thing stretches out longer and as the ripple effects hit their suppliers.
What do you think, Bill, is the broader economic reality of a General Motors bankruptcy? How does it affect everybody?
Well, as I mentioned, you're going to get some ripple effect probably through the suppliers to them. You also got, as plants are shut down for some amount of time, which that was already, some of it was going to happen already, you would obviously expect those people to spend less. I think the worry is perhaps we saw the good confidence numbers yesterday, that perhaps that robs us of some sort of confidence when this thing does officially, unfortunately, tip over.
Changing or shifting gears, if you will, pardon the pun, the Mortgage Bankers Association said today that the highest home loan rates in more than 2 months drained demand for refinancing last week, and that put a drag on U.S. mortgage applications to their lowest level since March. I thought that was the bright spot in the housing market.
It definitely was. I think that's the downside, is that wave of refinancing certainly seems to have slowed down to more of a trickle for the moment. But on the positive side, it was interesting, is the other side of that note was that purchase applications were actually up, although only up slightly. But definitely, that's a great thing that people are actually looking to buy homes.
Yeah. All right. Bill Stone from PNC Wealth Management. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, May 27th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Saudi Arabia's oil minister is forecasting a further rise in the price of oil this year. The minister made his comments today ahead of Thursday's OPEC meeting in Vienna. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
The oil minister, Ali Naimi, says that global demand for crude is picking up. He claims that consumption in China is rising strongly, and that's already been reflected in the recent price rise. Naimi says we could easily see oil hit $75 to $80 a barrel later this year. But many analysts are rather less bullish about crude. Simon Wardell of Global Insight says we're not seeing much higher consumption, just higher storage. Speculators are buying oil and storing it in the hope of higher prices.
We do continue to see inventories rising. In fact, there's a lot of speculation that we might actually run out of storage sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks because we still have a surplus in the market.
Wardell says if world oil storage capacity does run out within the next few weeks, the price of crude could drop like a stone. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Microsoft is reportedly planning to reboot its search engine with a new name. Instead of going to the internet to Google something, Microsoft wants us to Bing it instead. But is a jazzy new name enough to get people to switch over to a Bing search? Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
Branding expert Alan Adamson says Google has some of the most powerful brand appeal in the world.
It's become synonymous with easy, effective search.
Microsoft reportedly aims to overcome that with a fresh name for its new and improved search site. Here's the challenge, though. When I say Bing, what comes to mind?
Sing a song, Mr. Bing Crosby.
Sing, Bing, sing.
Wear the blue of the night.
Yeah, that could be a problem. Maybe, though, it's really just a reference to the imaginary sound a light bulb makes going on over your head. Microsoft reportedly plans to spend up to $100 million ad dollars to drill this idea into our heads. And Adamson says, who knows, that might be enough to persuade a respectable share to try Binging instead of Googling. After all, it's not the first quirky name for searching the internet.
Yahoo!
And if you think about it, Bing is really no more dated than that other word.
Barney Google, his googly eyes. Barney Google, his googly eyes.
Bada bing. In Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
McDonald's holds its annual meeting today. We don't know if they'll be serving Egg McMuffins, but eggs will certainly be a hot topic there. There's a shareholder resolution pushing McDonald's to start switching to cage-free eggs. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Sarah Gardner reports.
The Humane Society's Paul Shapiro says Wendy's, Burger King, Hardee's, they've already started using cage-free eggs, even if it's just a small fraction. So where's Mickey D's?
There's no excuse for McDonald's to continue lagging behind its competition on an issue as important as animal welfare.
Activists are squawking about McDonald's because it's the biggest egg buyer in the country. In 2001, the Golden Arches took the lead by demanding its suppliers give more cage space for hens. Its suppliers didn't like it, but they did it. Fast food analyst R.J. Hottovy says if McDonald's demanded cage-free eggs, many producers would switch.
I think certainly it's something that could turn the tide, and you see more and more people go to a cage-free stance.
McDonald's is already phasing out caged Egg McMuffins in Europe. Authorities there will ban crowded hen cages by 2012. But McDonald's says it won't make a decision on doing the same here before it completes a large-scale study on the issue. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Zale Corporation, the jewelry store company, posted a quarterly net loss today that was deeper than Wall Street's expectations. Customers have been cutting back on luxuries, so some high-end brands are cutting back too, quite literally. Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Collins.
If you're looking for the latest in luxury, you could ask your butler, or you could always turn on the Colbert Report.
Times may be hard, but they've led to some exciting new products, like the popular new Smoke for the Elite Nubs, which are shorter, cheaper versions of luxury cigars.
At 4 inches, nubs are kind of like half cigars. At $6.50 a piece, they cost about half as much as a typical cigar. Sam Lacia created the small smokes. He says they've caught on.
I mean, it did close to $8 million in its first year, and those are really big numbers for a brand right out of the gate.
Nubs are among several luxury products going small to make it big. The affluent aren't spending like they used to, so high-end restaurants are expanding their appetizer menus. Tony Hotels are promoting shorter stays. Even perfume is going petite.
Welcome to the world of Harajuku Lovers Fragrance.
Pop star Gwen Stefani launched the Harajuku Lovers fragrance line in the fall. The bottle designs are inspired by the Harajuku Fashion District of Tokyo. Karen Grant is a health and beauty care analyst with NPD Group.
These were about a third of an ounce and extremely successful. It was one of the best-selling launches that we had for 2008.
So successful that a few companies, including the one behind Stefani's line, are planning to launch other small bottles next year. Milton Pedraza is the CEO of the Luxury Institute.
I think it's just adapting to what the consumer needs. It's still a premium product. It's still efficacious. It's still beloved. It is still a very high price, but it is more affordable on a by-the-slice basis.
Pedraza says luxury consumers are loyal to their brands. And if more companies took a cue from cigars and cologne, they too may find that less is more in a shrinking economy. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
The managers and owners of the Four Seasons Resorts Aviara meet today in a decidedly downscale venue, a federal courtroom. The luxury hotel near San Diego is at the center of a particularly nasty and public battle for control. But as Joel Rose reports, the fight is more common than you might think.
The group of investors that owns the Aviara Resort accused the Four Seasons of mismanagement and tried to bring in a different operator to run the place. The Four Seasons responded by hiring more security and locking the owners out. Extreme? Yes, but not unheard of.
This dispute is a classic argument.
Gary Vallon teaches hospitality at Northern Arizona University. He says luxury hotel chains like the Four Seasons hate to reduce their room rates for fear of damaging the brand, even if that means more empty rooms in the short run.
You've got on the other side of the coin an owner of a property who is looking at his own personal needs, which is debt repayment, and he needs revenue every day.
Fallon says rising vacancy rates just add more pressure to the situation. Still, he says owners and operators usually try to settle their disputes in private because a prolonged court fight makes everyone look bad. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
The city of Chicago will learn later in the year whether it will host the 2016 Summer Olympics. If it does, the Windy City can thank its hometown connection to President Obama. He says he'll create a special White House office if Chicago gets the gold. WBEZ's Natalie Moore explains.
If Chicago gets to host the 2016 Summer Games, President Obama will appoint advisor Valerie Jarrett to head a special White House office. Unlike foreign governments, the U.S. doesn't offer any financial help to host cities. This new White House Olympic office would give moral support and coordinate events. Carson Cunningham is an Olympic historian at DePaul University. He says President Obama's public commitment is good for Chicago's bid.
The main thing giving Chicago a legitimate shot to actually win the right to host. So I just think it's another factor in that part of the dynamic.
Chicago is competing against Madrid, Tokyo, and Rio de Janeiro. The International Olympic Committee chooses the host city in October. In Chicago, I'm Natalie Moore for Marketplace.
Looking for a cheap flight? There's a new low-cost carrier expected to announce today plans to start flying in July. Jet America has the same founder as Skybus. Remember Skybus, another low-cost airline that went out of business about a year ago? Flights will be limited, mostly on the east side of the country, but some seats will go for as low as $9 one way. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us this morning. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money.
Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.